Welcome to the 379th episode of the So Video Games Podcast, where we talk about any game at all, including new stuff, old stuff, and anything in between. If we are playing it, we'll be talking about it. And I just want you all to know it's been a very quiet day here at Lake Wobegon. No, that's not right. It's actually been a snowy day here in Reykjavik, Iceland. No, it's not that either. No, it's actually a blustery day here in Seattle. Yeah, that's right. And today I am recording on March 9th, 2024. My name is Brad Galloway. I am the editor of GameCritics.com, and I am usually 50% of this here show, but today I am 100% because the man who is usually with me, Carlos Rodella, is away on special assignment. So this is a one-man show today. I'm going to do my best to gather my strength, pull it together, and focus with laser precision to bring you the same high-quality episode you expect, although I will be down 50% of the jokes and banter. So hopefully we'll make it through. I'm going to do the best I can do here, and if nothing else, we will talk about a lot of games. That part is absolutely guaranteed. All right, well, we are a little bit off kilter today because I'm used to having somebody to bounce some stuff off of, but in lieu of that, we're going to just forge ahead and we're going to do housekeeping. I have the house all to myself today. I'm actually stepping far over the strip of duct tape in the middle. I'm getting a lot of dirty shoe prints on Carlos's side, but let's not tell him that I did that. Not a whole lot to talk about today. Real briefly, actually two things, and one's not even game related, so I'm kind of breaking the rules of housekeeping a little bit, since this is usually reserved for things that are game related or game adjacent before we get to the main portion of the show. Let's talk about chips for just a second. Chipoys chips, C-H-I-P-O-Y-S. They are not a sponsor of the show, probably will not become one after this segment, but I was contacted by Chipoys PR. They are rolling out a brand new flavor. It is called Spicy Ranch, which, I mean, we don't get a lot of food solicitations, but I am kind of a food guy. I like trying new things, like trying new foods. And so I was like, oh, okay, well, sure. If you want to send me a couple chips, I shall try them and talk about them on the show, which is what I'm doing right here and right now. The people at Chipoys were kind enough to send us a box of like 8 bags of chips. I mean, they weren't giant bags, but they were pretty good sized bags. It was more chips than I could conceivably eat. And we had 4 flavors. We had the aforementioned Spicy Ranch. We had Original. We had Chile Limon. And we had Fire Red Hot. These are tortilla chips. They are rolled up in the shape of like a tube. And they are fried. I've seen other chips that are similar to this. But to be perfectly honest, I had never heard of Chipoys chips before, never had them before. So this was kind of a new experience for me, which I was actually looking forward to. So we opened up the box, opened up all the chips. Me, my son, and my wife, we gathered around and we were going to have a chip tasting party. So we each had a couple chips of each kind. And so I think, I mean, real talk, you know, you can always trust me to be very honest and straightforward with you here on the show. I gotta say, real talk, I didn't really like any of them. I didn't think they were very good, honestly. I'm so sorry. I was hoping to come and share this wonderful news about these amazing chips I discovered, but they were a little bit oily, and they, despite having all these fancy flavors, they didn't have a lot of flavor. In fact, it was really interesting because my wife and my son and I all kind of noticed that you got like this kind of like strong burst of flavor when you first put the chip in your mouth, but then it just like disappeared and the chip just finished like just like a piece of tortilla. It was really strange, like, you know, and it didn't even really build up over time. Sometimes you have a chip and like at first it's like not that big a taste, but then it kind of builds up and builds up as it accumulates in your mouth. But this one, it just didn't have a lot of flavor. Like none of them had a lot of flavor. It was really strange. I will say that out of the 4 chips we got, I actually did like Spicy Ranch the best. So I guess it's good that they introduced that flavor. I mean, it had, honestly, it was like the spiciest out of all of them, even spicier than Fire Red Hot, which was kind of surprising to us. And Fire Red Hot had basically no flavor whatsoever. And before anybody says, oh, Brad, you probably got COVID, you probably lost your sense of taste. No. I've never had COVID, not even once, to the best of my knowledge. And other food I ate that day tasted just fine. So it's not like I've lost my sense of smell or taste. They just were pretty bland. I didn't think they had enough flavor. I might have liked it more if they just had like double the spice on them. They just were really, really kind of straightforward and I don't know, kind of boring. I'm sorry, Japoys. I am disappointed to say this, and I hope your feelings aren't hurt, but I just didn't think they were that good. So, unfortunately, I cannot give them a big thumbs up. I cannot give them a check it out. But I'm glad for the opportunity. Thank you very much for sending those chips. It was awfully generous of you. I'm happy to have tried them. And, yeah, there we go. That is Chipoy's Chips, the brand new flavor rolling out. Spicy Ranch, which, again, was the best of the four that we tried. But overall, can't say that they were my favorite chips. So, there you go. Okay, now actually getting into game-related stuff, I just want to give a quick update on Helldivers 2. I suspect we will probably be doing many updates over the course of the season since this is kind of like a game-as-service sort of thing, and it's building and building and building. I know that Carlos and I were both kind of lukewarm on it at first. Pretty rough launch for a variety of reasons, but they've been patching it like constantly, sometimes even twice a day or whatever, and they've just been building and building and building, getting better and better incrementally. It's not where I would want it to be right now. It's still not as good in terms of the total polish package that the original Helldivers 1 was, but it's getting there. It's getting there. And I gotta say, I would be lying if I said I wasn't having any fun. I am having fun. There's just, you know, there's some stuff I want it to be fixed and some things I'm not happy with and some things I need to tweak, but overall, I'm glad I got it on day one. I'm glad I've been able to see it grow, and they just had a big update. There was a community-wide campaign to retake a certain planet, and so all the players were told to go to this one planet, and if we quote-unquote liberated this planet, which means a certain number of players achieving a certain number of missions on this planet, we were going to liberate the mech suit fabrication factory, and that took like, I don't know, less than a day or something. Like, it was honestly really fast. I logged in the morning. It was already halfway done by the time I logged in. I did a couple missions, logged out. And when I checked back in the next morning, it was already completely free. And they had accomplished the entire goal. So the community works fast for sure. And so the upside of this was that we finally got mech suits unlocked in Helldivers 2, which is something I've been wanting for a long, long time. And if by long, long time you mean since this game launched a couple weeks ago, then that's exactly what I mean. Just for some context, mech suits were in the original Helldivers, and that was like, it was one of your key components of your gear, because once you get up to the upper levels of difficulty, not only are you getting swarmed by, like, you know, the usual small and medium guys, but there's also huge, like, just bruiser hulking monsters that come out. A lot of them are bulletproof, a lot of them are really tough and aggressive, and you need something that's tougher than anything you can carry to kind of take those guys on. And so you unlock the mech suits in the original Helldivers 1 pretty quick, and they become a necessary part of gear. It was very common when we were doing the higher level raids, my wife, myself, my son, and anybody else we played with, that like basically everybody was bringing one or two mech suits. So we'd drop down, use our regular guns and whatever gear we brought, missiles or something, you know, do as much as we could. And when the shit got hot, one person would jump in a mech suit to give us like heavier backup. So like we would kind of rotate through, three people on the ground, one person in a mech suit. Mech suits come with Gatling guns and a whole bunch of missiles that are really good against the big guys. And so we would kind of rotate through. Heavy cover behind us, supporting us, the people on the ground doing the objectives, catching samples and, you know, doing whatever we needed to do. And that was a really viable strategy. Those mech suits were not available in the game at launch. And so I felt like it was almost like half a game, because once we got up to the higher levels, I am currently playing the extreme. I think it's called the extreme level. Maybe it's insane. It's one of the, I'm not to the end yet because the end is Helldive, but I'm pretty close to the upper tier of difficulty. But it was like, there was no way. Even going in with like four people who were all high level, I was trying a couple times. We were just getting our asses handed to us. We just needed more firepower. And so now that the mech suits are here, I am looking forward to developing that strategy again. They're fun. They look good. They handle really well. It's kind of hard to tell how much damage they take. So I've died a couple times thinking that I was okay, but actually my mech suit took some fatal damage. So that's kind of a bummer. I hope they kind of like clarify that a little bit, or maybe there's something I'm missing. But overall, I'm really glad the mech suits are here. It's just been a huge boon, and it kind of restores a little bit of the former glory to this game, which I'm really happy about. So still playing a couple missions a day, still grinding through, earning resources and unlocking stuff, and still having fun. So I look forward to this game continuing to polish and rebalance, and I believe they're also launching a brand new battle pass, which has a whole bunch of new guns and armor and stuff coming, I want to say next week. And I believe that stuff is electricity based, in case anybody is curious about that. You can probably look up more on their Discord or online. But yeah, Helldivers is still pretty good. And if anybody wants to join, let me know. I'll give you my friend code. We can join up for a bit and just shoot some bugs or shoot some robots or something. So yeah, good times. All right, that is all I have for housekeeping. It's a short one today. Before I get to the main portion of the show, just a quick reminder that you can help support the podcast by going to patreon.com/thesovietgamespodcast. Every little bit helps with the ever-increasing cost of hosting. Also upgrading equipment, and if we need to pick up any games for the show that we're not able to get codes for, that always helps as well. Also, if you chip into the $5 or above level, you will be personally invited by me to join our members-only Discord community. Now, we have had a couple people say they're not really familiar with Discord, which is totally fine. I get it. Because I wasn't really familiar with Discord that much either until recently. But I know Discord can do a lot of things, but basically what we use it for is just kind of like a chat room. Like, you pop in, you see what people have been talking about, you type in a couple messages, and then you bounce and you come back when you get a notification or when someone answers your, responds to your comment or something like that. We have lots of different things we talk about. We talk about food, action figures, we talk about games, all the different consoles, movies, TV, anything. And it's a slowly growing community. We got some pretty cool people in there. So I'm really inviting you all to come join us there and just chat a little bit more if your weekly dose of Sovity Games is not quite enough. So there you go. Again, you can find that at patreon.com/thesovietgamespodcast. And rest assured, though, I know Carlos jokes about this basically every week, but we are not going to paywall anything. We only want you to contribute if you want to, if you can. If you can't or you just don't wish to, that's totally fine. We will never paywall anything, and you'll get the same great show every week, free of charge, because we love ya. Okay, let's see. Let me check my script real quick, and then we shall bounce to the main portion of the show. All right, first game of the show today is called Torn Away. This is by a developer called Perelisoc, I believe. And I tried to check out their website. It's using the Cyrillic alphabet, so I'm guessing they must be, maybe Russian or somewhere around that neighborhood. And I think it's probably Russian specifically because of the content of the game. Torn Away is a strongly narrative adventure featuring a little girl. And this tells a story during World War II where her father has gone off to fight in the war. She is Russian. She's living in the city of Stalingrad. And dad's away at war. Things are pretty hard back home. Mom's having some trouble. And the game begins with kind of like giving us a look at their home life. The game features a 2D perspective, and the graphics are, they're kind of rough, but they're also kind of like really nice at the same time. It almost looks like construction paper or like a child's storybook a little bit. It's got kind of a dreamy quality to it that I think is pretty appealing, especially in screenshots. I'm not going to lie. I think the production values are a little bit on the rough side. It's not terrible. But animation's a little stiff and there's a few little bugs here and there, but it's nothing really even to get upset about. So I feel kind of churlish even mentioning that. But anyway, so in the beginning, you're not quite sure what's going on. You're kind of doing these chores for the girl at home. I don't want to give too much away, but she's getting ready for her mom's birthday. So in the beginning, when they introduce you to the game, it's like, move left and right, check these rooms, look for items. You pick up items, you explore the room a little bit. And at this point, I was like, okay, this is kind of dull. I don't know if this is my thing or not. But it pretty quickly takes a very hard turn into much darker territory, and then I was like, oh shit, oh no, what's going on? And then I got hooked in. Again, not to give too much away, but I think it's pretty clear from all of the PR materials and the trailers that what ends up happening is that this little girl and her mom end up going to a German prison camp, work camp. I don't know that it's the same kind of camp that the Jews were placed in during World War II, but from what I've seen so far, and full disclosure, I haven't finished the game yet. I'm about halfway through it, I think. They are put to work doing different tasks for the Germans. So things get sad and things get dark and things get rough pretty quickly. They jump around in time a little bit. I'm not going to say anything else about this because I believe this experience is probably pretty short and I don't want to ruin anything. But it's about this girl's experience in this prison camp during World War II. And, it's pretty good, man. It's pretty good. Despite the roughness of the controls and the little bugs and stuff, which, nothing major, other things like the voice acting is definitely not from native English speakers. And so it sounds a little strange to the ear, but it's not bad. You know, it's just like what they're talking about really hits home. And I think that's really the key and the thing that we should all focus on, especially with everything going on in the world right now. Like, as I was playing this, I couldn't help but constantly think about what the people in Palestine must be going through right now. You know, the kids that are starving, the kids that are getting killed, and, you know, parents and families separated, and all the sheer horror that's happening over there. My heart goes out to all of them. And so when I was playing this game, that's all I could think about. Like, it was really connecting on a very, very deep, very immediate level. This wasn't really as abstract as you might normally play. Like, if I had played this 10 years ago or something, yeah, I probably would have responded to the story, but I don't know that it would have, like, took my breath away and kind of made me sit up and connect the way that I did. But I did. And we are living in a different time, and things are happening in the world, and I think that's kind of reflected in what's going on. So, yeah, it was pretty powerful. Again, haven't finished it. I definitely want to see this one through. Very curious to see how it plays out. But again, don't expect too much on the side of production quality. You're really here for the story, and you're really here for this little girl's journey. And I think it's definitely one that's worth seeing. So, yeah, Torn Away. I'm playing it on PS5. I believe it's on everything. And I think it came out, I want to say, last year, I believe. So it should be widely available. You know, a little bit grim, a little bit dark, but I think it's also really kind of real and necessary. So maybe check it out. I think it's definitely worth your time. All right. Next one up this week is called Abyss, Build to Destroy, coming from developer Randwerk, R-A-N-D-W-E-R-K. This is a pretty interesting one. I love the graphics. I mean, just more than anything else, I love the visuals. The developers call it like kind of a semi-brutalist style that's based on some sci-fi artists like H.R. Giger and others. So when you look at it, just like screenshots, it's something about it just kind of grabs you. Like, you, it's got this feeling, this kind of grime, this kind of personality to it. Like, it's very, very noticeable. So what you're looking at is buildings, blocks, towers, you know, like weird kind of just like, you know, architecture that is familiar but not really too familiar. Like, you think you might know what it is, but then you look at it closer and you're like, you know, I actually have no idea what this is supposed to be, but it's kind of reaching out to me, and it's definitely like connecting in some way. Kind of Blade Runner-ish, kind of alien-ish, kind of just kind of abstract. You don't get a good feeling from it, but I think that's intentional. Like, it kind of feels kind of gross and kind of like anti-human in a way, but I think that's definitely the point of it. So the game is presented from an isometric perspective, and what you do is you need to build objects. Every level, you are given a certain number of objects, blocks, you know, like cylinders, little pieces of machinery that spin, connecting blocks or whatever, kind of like a little construction set. And what you do is you are faced with these brutalist buildings in front of you, and you have to destroy them. But not only destroy them, there's these little red, I don't know, gem-like structures that are embedded in all the buildings. And so you have to, like, destroy those. Those are the required destruction items. You must destroy all the gems. And then you want to destroy as much of the rest of the building as possible. So, for example, one of the earlier levels has you looking at a bridge. This really kind of gross, weird techno bridge. And there are two red gems, like, in each of, like, the road surfaces. But there's also, like, the supporting pylons and the rest of the road that's kind of in front and back of it. So you got to, like, number one, you must get those red things to fall. Knock them down somehow by using your construction kit to build something that's going to destroy it. You have bombs, you have like the spinny things. Like, you can stack up these blocks. They have these blocks that are called super heavy blocks that when you put them on top of something, they fall kind of straight down and kind of rip through other surfaces. So with that bridge, you have to think, okay, well, I've got like these blocks. What shape can I make out of these that is somehow going to fall on the bridge, or knock into the bridge, or spin around and smash the bridge? So it's kind of a challenge. It's like a puzzle game, but it's also like a destruction game, and it's also like a building game. And so it's kind of a creative approach. I wasn't quite sure what I was getting into with this one, but within a couple levels, I'm like, okay, I totally get it. Like, this is like, it is definitely a demolition game, but feels and looks unlike any other demolition game that I've played before. So I think the visuals are cool. I think the concept is cool. I think the vibe is like super, uber cool. I love the vibe so much. But I will have to say that I do have some issues with the mechanics of it. I think part of it is that because you're presented with the isometric viewpoint, it is sometimes hard to tell where things are in space. Like, sometimes I'm like, I think I know where something is, and then I set up a block to fall, and then it falls like one or two blocks to the left of it. I'm like, oh, the depth perception was off. I couldn't tell that it was like exactly where it was. Or sometimes when I'm trying to build a structure with my blocks, I'll put up like a little pylon, and I'm like, okay, well, I'll put a pylon here. I want to connect an arm to this, and I want the arm to be on the end. And you're just like, you're trying to get it to move. I'm using the PlayStation 5 controller, playing this on PS5. And I'm just like, I'm trying to get it on there, and it's almost on there, but it's not quite on there. And I'm going back and forth. And I'm trying to get it on there. It's not quite there. And it kind of gets like irritating after a while. So that was kind of annoying. I did find that for some reason, the buttons didn't always respond. It was worse in the beginning of the game. It kind of got better as I played more. But like sometimes I would click on something and just there would be no response. And then I'm like, is the game frozen? What's happening? And then I would click again and then like it would jump ahead because I had clicked it twice. And then I'm like, no, go back. And then it was just was kind of like a really strange thing to have. Like buttons should be really responsive. I'm not sure what was going on with that. Also, I kind of just don't like the overall controls. Like the way that they have the division between the two sticks and the D-pad, I just feel like it's not optimal. I feel like we could come to a different solution about how you move the level, how you move your cursor, how you move the camera. It's just not quite there for me on controller. It's playable for sure, but I never got to the stage where I was no longer thinking about controls. I was always futzing with it. I was always like, oh, okay, how do I get the camera? I can't see it quite well enough. This isn't right. The cursor's not quite right there. And so I never got to like that flow state where you're just like in it, where you're just, you know, building things and destroying and just really experiencing like the meat of the gameplay. The interface always kind of kept me at a distance and it kept dragging me out a little bit. So kind of unfortunate that it hasn't been smoothed out that way. But overall, I think it's so fucking cool. Like just the vibe and just the energy of it. I think if you like nihilistic stuff, like dark sci-fi, if you like Blade Runner, Alien, anything like that, you probably will be pretty attracted to this the way that I was attracted to it. And I do think it's pretty neat. I have been having a lot of fun just kind of building stuff and, you know, watching it, you know, blow up. And sometimes you're like, oh, just if I had been one block over, then you go back and kind of fix things. Oh, which reminds me. The other complaint I have, and I hate to be so negative on this because I do think it's cool, but the other negative I have is it's not very easy to kind of go back and just redo something. I felt like there was too many steps, especially for a game like this where you're kind of like eventually making fine adjustments. Like you build a tower, maybe it's one block to the left, maybe it's one block to the right, maybe it's one block too short. And so you want to just really quickly iterate on what you've done. And I found it pretty difficult. It wasn't as smooth and seamless as you think it would be in a game like this. And so again, comes back to the interface kind of taking me out of the experience where it's like, it just needed a little bit more polish, needed to be a little bit more intuitive, a little bit more smooth and streamlined. So I think the interface on console is a bit of an issue. I'm wondering if it's probably better on PC. I have to kind of imagine that it might be, although I can't say that for sure. But once you get away from the interface issues, I think that just the subject matter is cool. This game definitely has a personality all its own. It's got a visual identity all its own. And I'm down with it. I like the vibe a lot. So I don't know, kind of half and half on this one. I think there's some stuff to work through, but at the same time, I do think it's kind of worth it. So that is Abyss Build to Destroy. All right, next game up is Tamarack Trail. This comes to us from Yarrow Games. This one is a turn-based roguelike. And I love these ones. I almost want to say it's like a deck builder, but it's not a deck builder. It's a dice builder. And don't go away screaming. Don't run, because I know that usually dice don't always appeal to the same people who like card games or deck builders. But this is a little bit different. And I think it's actually pretty cool. I don't know exactly what the story is. It's kind of like there's an opening cutscene. It seems like, you know, bad things are happening. Kind of a Cthulhu something comes out of space influence and starts corrupting a forest. And when the game begins, you are kind of looking at a side view, ant farm view of a, I don't know, like a lodge, a cabin with a bunch of rooms in it. And there's a creature in there, like a guy, but he's kind of like a turtle guy. And you don't know who he is or exactly what's going on, but he kind of welcomes you. He says, this is a lodge. You can upgrade certain things here. It's kind of like your home base, your hub that you start from. There's a variety of things you can upgrade over time, but basically he kind of gets you into the game right away. Your first starting character is, I want to say it's called the detective. I could be wrong on that, but nothing really looks like a detective. He looks more like a hunter to me. He's like a guy in a cape, and you go out to the forest. It's 2D. Hand-drawn art, and the art is just like dynamite. It looks so sharp. Just as a quick side note, I'm playing it on my 60-inch TV, playing this on PS5. It's also available on Switch. I would say probably don't even think about playing it on Switch, because I can only imagine the graphics would be so small you can't really appreciate them, as well as all the stuff on the interface. I mean, I didn't play it on Switch, but like, just looking at the way it looks, I'm like, oh, no. This is not for the Switch. This is for a big TV. So just keep that in mind. But it looks really, really, really great on my 60-inch TV. So you go out to the forest. It's you look at your guy. The detective's on the left. Enemies are on the right. And before you get to that, there's a map on the screen, very much like Slay the Spire, which I think has been so influential on all the roguelike games lately, and the deck builders and that kind of thing. So you see a map. There's all these nodes. You don't quite know what they are at first, but there's like monster encounters. There's campfires where you restore your health. There's shops where you can buy some bits and bobs. There's story events where you can make choices and they either hurt or harm you. I mean, this is all par for the course. If you've played Slay the Spire or any of the many games that have come since Slay the Spire, this follows that template basically to a T. Now, you may be wondering, what's the big deal? Why am I bothering to talk about it now? Good question. So where Tamarack Trail diverges from those other games is the dice aspect, which I just mentioned. Now, usually I'm not a big fan of like actually rolling dice. I like to have more control of my games. I like to be more specific. But this one is really, really cool because it is not a deck builder, but a dice builder. And what I mean by that is you start the game with two dice. And then I believe they are standard cubic dice. And so what happens is you do a couple battles, and then every once in a while you get like another face for one of these die. So what happens is you pause, go to the menu, you can choose either of the die you start with, and then you like unfold it so it looks flat. So if you look at a, you know, like a six-sided die, you unfold it, it kind of makes like a T-shape, or I guess you could fold it in any different way, but in the game it unfolds to be like a T-shape, and you see how all the faces line up side by side. And so you can replace those faces with any of the faces that you get. For example, the starting die will have just like a basic shield, looks like a turtle shell. A basic attack looks like an eagle claw, and it's just like pretty straightforward. But you might get a new face that says like inflict bleed, and it looks like a pair of teeth. And so you can take off one of the eagle claws from the dice, just get rid of it or just put it to the side or something, and then put the teeth on it. And so next time you roll, you have a chance of getting that bleed effect. Some of these dice also have special abilities, which are actually pretty cool. It took me a little while to kind of get the feel of it, but once I did, I thought it was quite clever. So for example, you might get a dice that looks like a frog where it does like minimal damage. It'll do like 2 damage, which is not very much, but then it'll say flip the dice to the right, and whatever's on the right is you get to do that too. So you could eventually, if you have enough of the right dice faces, string together a combo on the face of your dice. So if you roll, let's say you get the frog, you do 2 damage, and then you turn the dice over. Then there might be another frog, you do another 2 damage, then you turn the dice over again, and then you get like the teeth and you inflict some bleed. And then, you know, like if you judiciously put these dice together, you can have a 3 or 4 or 5 hit combo, and then you're doing like, you know, multiple attacks per turn instead of just the one. It's really clever. And what I ended up doing was like having one dice that was dedicated towards attacking, all my various attack spells on one dice, and then one dice always dedicated to defending, so that no matter what I rolled, I always had both options available to me. I thought that worked out pretty well. Once you beat the first boss, which comes pretty quickly, I think you have to do maybe like 5 or 6 battles and you get to the first boss. If you beat him, then you get a third dice. And so you just roll 3 next time. And so you can continuously build on your dice. And if you get more dice faces, you can keep changing. I really like to specialize in bleed. I think bleed worked really well for me. But there's other ways to go. There's like confusion. There's like drowsiness. There is a couple other different like parrying and defensive stuff like that. So there's a wide variety of die faces that you can get. And it seemed like I was unlocking new faces pretty often, but those are not ones that you earn. They just become like available in the game. So like once you unlock them, as far as I can tell, you just have a chance of encountering them in the gameplay. So it's not like you're constantly building up like better and better dice to start with, which I think is kind of a bummer. Because I think my main complaint about this game is that the progression is not great. So I love the graphics. They're fucking amazing. I love the dice system, which is really brilliant. But the progression feels a little bit too grindy. So for example, like I said, when you unlock these die faces, you don't add them to a library that you get to access, because it would be pretty awesome to be able to unlock dice faces, customize your dice, and then start the next run with the good dice that you had. That would be great. I would love that. But that is absolutely not what happens. That's a bummer. So you have to kind of like start from scratch every time you do a new run. That kind of sucks. Also, to be able to unlock things at the lodge, like I'm not even sure. It's like you start off with like you earn more resources, or you unlock different options and stuff like that. They all require this one resource that you get in the game, and it just accumulates really, really slowly. Right now, I think I maybe earn like one of those resource. I forget what it's called. It looks like a flower. I'm not sure what it is, but you get like one of these like per run. And some of the costs of these unlocks are like, oh, this thing costs 15 to unlock, and this thing costs, you know, 5 to unlock, and this thing costs 10 to unlock. And it just feels like, damn, that's like a lot, because some of these runs, you know, could be a half an hour, could be 45 minutes, depending on how well you do. I have not completed the game yet. I have not yet done a full run from start to finish because it's pretty long. But like, I start to feel a little bit of the grind set in, and it's not a good grind. It's not like, oh, I'm making small progress, I'm making one more step, I'm one step closer to finishing. It just feels like, okay, I'm still kind of at the same starting point. And yeah, I unlocked some stuff, but it didn't really directly benefit me. I'm not noticing that benefit from the get-go. And I'm kind of just like doing the same build-up every time. And, you know, you kind of know what the bosses are when you get there, so you can kind of metagame to build around those bosses when you get there. But at the same time, I wish there was like a little bit more progression, whether it's you keeping dice faces or maybe just accumulating the resource a little bit faster or something. It just feels a little bit too slow in the progression. And also the map is pretty daunting. When you see it the first time, you're like, oh shit, this is like a lot of battles to get through. And while they all go fairly quickly, it still feels very overwhelming. So I think, if I had to say any criticism about Tamarack Trail, which I think in general is pretty cool and I like a lot of it, I think they just need to like make it a little peppier and make it a little quicker. I realize this is probably somebody's labor of love and I respect that, and I think it's a great piece of work, but I don't want to spend like a year trying to finish this game. I would like it to be a little faster and just to enjoy what they've done. You know, I don't want to have to like, I mean, I know this probably sounds really, really kind of, I don't know, weak or something, but like, I don't want to work that hard in order to see what this game has to offer. I want to like enjoy the systems. I want to see the interplay of the dice. I want to see what kind of combos I can come up with. I want to see how these combos interact with the monsters I'm about to face. And I just don't want it to be feel like I'm trudging through molasses. You know, it's going a little bit too slow for my taste. So I'm hoping that the developer will take some action. I kind of jumped over to Steam to read some of the comments, and I saw similar comments from many of the people there saying it felt like too much of a grind, the resource costs were too high, there's too many battles. And so I know the developer is hearing that, and I hope they take it to heart, because I think what they've got is actually really fucking cool, and I really like it a lot. It really, this dice thing is just working for me, man. Like, it really works. I think it's really smart, and I haven't seen anything quite like it. So I like that a lot, but there's also the rest of the game to consider. And I think they're falling down and doing themselves a little bit of a disservice by making it so like long and grindy. And it kind of just feels like someone threw the gauntlet down in front of me, and I'm really having serious thoughts about whether I want to rise to that challenge or not, which is a shame because I think this stuff is pretty brilliant. So check it out if you like Slay the Spire, if you like any of that type of roguelike deck builder, that kind of a thing. I think there's a lot of really fucking good stuff here. It's really good. I want to be very clear about that. I think this is like largely extremely successful on multiple fronts. But I think the pace and the accumulation is just a little bit too slow right now. But that can be patched. That can be fixed. Who knows? In 6 months, this game could be firing on all cylinders, and it could be like a total check it out. So we shall see. But right now, definitely worth a look if you like Slay the Spire or others like that. So Tamarack Trail from Yarrow Games. Still a check it out, even though it's kind of like a slightly muted check it out. All right, one more game to cover before we get done with the main portion of the show. This one is a random one that came out of nowhere. And in fact, it came from the So Video Games Discord community. So a big thank you to Elijah Beam for hipping me to this game that I'm really enjoying quite a bit from a couple years ago. It's called Tron Runner, like R-U-N /R. So kind of like runner, but runner. So it's got a little bit of that computer, you know, HTML lingo to it, because this is based on Tron, the, you know, IP where programs are alive inside the world of a computer. Everybody is made up of neon and glowing lines, and they talk about RAM and disks, and they have adventures inside a computer. Pretty famous, pretty well known. I'm guessing if you're listening to this podcast, you probably have encountered Tron in one form or another over the years. They did a reboot a couple years ago with everybody wearing black and stuff, and it was pretty cool and all that. But apparently this came out at that time, and I don't know how it slipped past my radar, because I am kind of a Tron fan, being a child of the 80s when it originally debuted. and I just don't ever remember seeing this one before. So we were talking about something in the Discord. I don't know what it was, but Elijah chipped in a list of games that he had on the Xbox. And he's like, oh, and this was one of them. It was like in the middle of his list. And I looked at his list. And I'm like, okay, this is good stuff. He's got good taste. And then I got to the middle of it. And I'm like, oh, wait a minute. Tron? What? And so I asked him about it. He said it was like an infinite runner. Except it's not infinite. You can finish it. So that to me sounds great. I do kind of like the really intense reflex-based kind of like pure gameplay of like some of these runner games. But I don't like the fact that most of them you can never finish. That kind of just like leaves me hanging in a way that I don't enjoy. But this one you actually can finish, which is awesome. Very few of them have an endpoint. So that was exciting. So I ran, didn't walk. I ran to my Xbox and picked it up, downloaded it. There's also some DLC, which I don't really recommend. It's just a bunch of skins. It doesn't really do anything. So unless you have like a super favorite Tron character, and I don't know that anybody does. But if you have a super favorite Tron character who's one of the skins, I mean, go for it. But otherwise, it's not really like anything significant. You're fine just having the base game. But like I said, this is a runner style game. It's from the behind the back perspective. And so you start the game. There's not a lot of preamble. There's not a lot of intro, not a lot of story. But I guess it kind of fits right in with the Tron universe. You just kind of assume that you are a good natured program trying to defeat, you know, the evil programs of the world. The, you know, master control program or whatever other evil program is out and about in the interwebs. And so you choose your character. They all look really cool. You can choose the light color of your light armor. You can be a man or a woman from the more recent like black style armor design, or you can have the old school, looks like more, I don't know, circuit board designs on your armor. I went old school because it looks pretty cool, but there's like a few different ones to choose from. And then you start running. You dropped into a track and you just start running forward. You cannot stop, as most of these runners are. And you have the light disc that is made famous from Tron, where it looks like a frisbee. And you throw it. It like destroys anything that it touches. So you can run. You can slide under things. You can jump over things. And when you jump, you can also glide. If you hold the jump button, these like digital wings pop out of your back. And you can glide for quite a while. There's wall running. I think there might be one or two other things. Oh, and also you can have these extra abilities, these little bits that go with you. They're like little companions. And so they, if you have enough credits to buy one of these bits, it'll like double your score, or it'll shoot enemies for you, or it'll provide a shield or something like that. So there are these different little modifiers you can add to each run. And then it becomes kind of like a score-based game. You can just finish each level, get to the end, and that's good enough. You move on to the next one. But there's also like, you know, 3 stars. And then if you get 3 stars, there's also like gold 3 stars. And so if you like doing score runs, you know, basically it usually involves doing one of these levels completely perfectly with like the best modifier. I've done it a few times. Feels really good when you do it. I don't know. I'm going to do it for every level in the game, but it's been a pretty pleasant challenge. I do like 1 or 2 levels a day. Just get my run in and just kind of run around. It feels great. The controls are tight. I think the graphics are really cool. It was originally built for, I want to say, the PS4. So expect that level of graphics. It's not bleeding edge. It's not cutting edge. This would be pretty fucking amazing if they gave it an upgrade with like the more recent level of graphics. I would pay for an update to see this. If it was like shinier and more glowy and, you know, more techno and stuff, that would be pretty dope. But it still looks good as it is. It looks very like neon and bright and flashy. And when you get in the zone, it just feels good. Just running and jumping and throwing that disc, and then you slide and then you jump again and then you dodge. And it's really well put together. I haven't played a run game in quite a while. I like Tron. I like the way it handles. And I like the fact that I can not only go for a score, but also that I will be able to complete it. Just, you know, get through all the levels. Then you can say you did it. So that's going to feel pretty good. I like it. It's pretty straightforward, pretty simple. I like it a lot. I will also say that in addition to the on foot running, the other thing Tron is very famous for are the light cycles, where you have this kind of like slick back kind of high tech, you know, like turbo cycle that when it drives, it leaves behind a trail of light. And if anybody runs into that trail of light, they get destroyed. So they do light cycles here. I have barely touched it because honestly, I'm not a fan of racing games. And this is a little bit too close to racing for me. So you get 2 games in 1. You get the running part, which I like a lot. And then you get the light cycle racing, which is, you know, is fine. But I just personally don't like racing that much. But you start off on a track. You can got to keep up your top speed. You get a little speed boost. It's all timed. You can like attack enemies. You get power ups. You can drift. I hate drifting. Drifting. Can we just pause for a second and say drifting fucking sucks? I fucking hate drifting because it never quite works the way that I think it does. and I never can quite get the hang of it. Maybe some people think it's fine and it's no big deal for them, but for me, drifting is something I have always struggled with, and I just can't wrap my head around it. It's almost like parrying in Dark Souls, where it's like, I know some people are really good at it, and if you can do it, it's probably a big benefit to you, but like, I just can't, and I just can't. And so drifting for me is like that. I would rather do some braking. I would rather look for the right line. I would rather, you know, be skillful in that way. But drifting, just, I fuck myself up, man. I fuck it up and I go careening off the side and I skid and I lose my momentum. And it's such a shit show every time. So drifting is not for me, but you can drift with a light cycle and that's fine. So you've got all the running levels. You've got a whole bunch of light cycle levels. And then there's one other clump of content, which honestly, I haven't even touched yet. It's called the infinite levels. I don't even know what's over there. Haven't even touched it yet because I'm having such a good time with the running part. I have not been tempted to check out the other stuff. But Tron Runner exists, which I didn't know it existed. It's by Sanzaru Games, which I forgot to mention at the beginning. They're the people who've done a lot of stuff, a lot of mobile stuff, I believe. And also they did Sly Cooper Thieves in Time, which was a pretty good update to the Sly Cooper franchise on PlayStation. So Sanzaru's got some experience under their belt. But Tron Runner is pretty good. If you like Tron or if you like running games, I think this is a really, really nice one. I'm having a blast with it, and I think it's great. So no real complaints there. The only thing that I will say is a caution to watch out for is that this was clearly meant to cash in when Tron was hotter. I think there's another Tron movie coming, so we may see a resurgence of this. But you earn credits while doing these runs, but you have to have credits in order to get the modifiers. Like if you want your little buddies to go with you, or if you want like some of the special abilities that you can equip, they cost credits. And if you don't have enough credits by earning them in the run, you can buy them for real money. So it's got a little bit of that like mobile game flavor to it. To be perfectly honest, I haven't had to pay for any credits at all so far. I've always had plenty. But just know that if you're terrible at the game and you don't have enough credits, it is possible to kind of like run out of credits. And then, I mean, I guess all you got to do is just grind the first couple levels again to get some more. And if you keep playing well, you get enough. I feel like I've always had enough, but I guess there is a world in which you run out of credits and you might be tempted to pay a couple bucks for those credits to just kind of boost your way back in. So that's a thing. But again, I haven't had to do it. I haven't felt the need to do it. It hasn't been necessary. It's not like a paywall or anything. But just know that it's in there. Feels a little bit gross, but the game is so good, I'm willing to overlook that and just let it slide. So that is Tron. That is a portmanteau if I've ever heard one. Tron Runner from Sanzaru Games. I'm playing it on PS5. I think it's probably on everything. And that is the last game I'm going to talk about in the main portion of our show. But as we normally do, I do have a couple non-game things to talk about. So if you don't want to hear about these non-game things, feel free to bounce. There's no more game talk coming up. But we will, or I guess me, I could be the royal we, but me, I'm going to talk about a couple things that are not game related here. All right. We usually talk about TV and movies and stuff, and that is going to be no different this week. My family usually settles in to watch some TV before we turn in to go to bed every night. And so we have a slew of different family shows that we watch. And we just finished up a couple and we wanted to start something new. And the one we chose was Scooby-Doo Mystery Incorporated. This debuted in 2010 and it ran for, I think, 3 years. So it takes the traditional cast of Scooby-Doo, which I'm assuming most people are probably familiar with. It's Fred, Velma, Daphne, and Shaggy and their dog Scooby. They go on adventures to solve mysteries. Usually it's like, you know, some real estate person is trying to buy some land and they put on like a ghoul costume to scare people off, to lower the property value. Or maybe somebody wants to get some oil from an oil field. And so they put on like an oil monster costume to scare people off. I mean, I feel like people probably know what Scooby-Doo is. But this particular series had a little bit of a skew to it. It's a little bit more hip, a touch more modern. There's a little bit more romance in it. The attraction of the girls to the guys is way more overt than it was in the previous series. I'm curious to see how this plays out too, because Velma is really into Shaggy. He's not so into her, and I'm kind of curious where that's going. Daphne really loves Fred, but Fred is really obsessed with making traps, and so he's kind of oblivious to the whole thing. So that's kind of funny. We'll see how that goes. But also, I was kind of skipping ahead, and my son has seen a few of these. He's seen a few more episodes than I have. And he says that eventually, like, the monsters, instead of being real estate developers and oil barons end up being like real monsters. Apparently there's a Cthulhu influence or a cosmic horror influence that shows up where there's like a series of larger mysteries that are apart and outside of the per episode mysteries. And some of the stuff is real. Like there's actually spirits and ghosts that they kind of have to deal with, a larger cosmic horror mystery going on. And so they got to solve that. There's also a lot of like, you know, past crimes they have to uncover and all this sort of stuff. So it seems pretty cool. I'm digging it. Liking a lot. We're doing a couple episodes a night. I think it's pretty good stuff so far. Also, the wife and I just started Surreal Estate, season 2. This stars some of the people who used to be on Wynonna Earp, which we were big fans of. And so this is a lot of the stars who finished with that show have started this one. It's about a real estate developer who specializes in haunted properties. He can talk to ghosts, and so he uses that power to kind of like figure out what's going on with these properties that no one else can sell. He fixes them up and, you know, evacuates the ghost and gets to the bottom of things. And so they do kind of like a ghost of the week kind of mystery. I think the cast is really cute and charming. I think the episodes are really fun. It's definitely on the lighter side, even though there are like little scary moments and jump scares and stuff. It's not really like horror. I think it's just kind of a little bit of comedy, a little bit of romance, a little bit of a little bit of spooky, a little bit of like lore every week. And then they kind of just do this whole thing. Season 1 was great, really came together really well. Season 2, still okay, but I'm a little bit disappointed. Not to spoil anything, but the main character goes through some issues and he ends up becoming kind of a jerk for the first couple episodes. He's being kind of rude to everybody and I don't really appreciate that. He's, in general, a really likable guy. I like the cast and I like seeing the cast work together as a team. The main character going on this bender of being kind of like overly sensitive and insecure and because of that, lashing out at people is not fun, and I don't really enjoy that, and I hope that they work it out pretty quickly. I'm hoping they do not take the entire season to work him through his shit, because he needs to see a therapist, like, ASAP. But the same funny, you know, funny, weird, Ghost of the Week stuff is still there. I still think it's a really fun show. I do like it a lot. I just want them to hurry up and get this guy past his shit, because that part I don't enjoy. But overall, Surreal Estate is definitely my jam. I do like this kind of show. The last thing I want to mention is Gem and the Holograms, a cartoon about a woman who has special earrings that transform her into a rock and roll icon through the power of hologram technology. This originally ran in 1985, finished in 1988. And when I was a kid, I saw this on like, you know, weekday afternoons after school. And I was just like, man, what is going on? There's like all these beautiful women and they're playing rock and roll and they're having these like international adventures. And this is so fucking cool. I love this. But back in the day, back in the 80s, man, like, you know, there was nothing on demand. You couldn't download anything. It was like if you were at home and in front of the TV at the right time and watching the right channel, then you watched it. And if you missed, then you missed. That was it. You didn't have a chance, right? So I remember Gem very strongly from when I was a kid, and I really, really wanted to like watch more of it. I wanted just to see the whole series. And now, through the power of technology or modern technology, that is possible. I've been watching it on Tubi, T-U-B-I, that particular channel. They've got the whole series. And the wife and I were watching one or two episodes a night. We just watched the entire run of it. So there's kind of like a dream come true to be able to just start at episode one, watch them all the way through. It was great. And I got to say, it was really interesting because this was a cartoon that was mostly about women. Like 90% of the show is just women. And a lot of it was written by women, which I have to think is probably pretty unusual back in the 80s, especially in the cartoon scene. A woman named Christy Marks was I believe she was the creator, or at least was instrumental in the creation of, and she was the main writer for a long time. And it just was really interesting to see how this cartoon was so much different from other cartoons of the era, how different it was from like G.I. Joe or Thundercats or Transformers or whatever. You know, they did their share of hijinks. They always went to like a new country or they were putting on a concert somewhere. So there was definitely like, you know, glamour and glitter, fashion and fame, as they say in the opening montage. Opening theme song. But also they spent a lot of time just like on relationships too. And it was interesting. I think that more often than not, those things kind of landed in an 80s way. I mean, of course they weren't doing like these really deep like character profiles, and continuity wasn't the best thing back then, although there were some elements that did carry over. But they didn't have showrunners as we know them today. They didn't have like a series Bible of that kind. So sometimes they would have just like a new writer come in and he or she would write just like, you know, a weird episode where you're like, well, this doesn't fit. But the people who wrote the core episodes did kind of try to carry things forward. And so whenever you got somebody mentioning something that happened in a former episode, you're like, oh, nice continuity. Great. You're kind of building on some stuff. It ended up really being pretty cool. I think that in general, one thing that we really noticed about Gem was that it was surprisingly culturally respectful. They often went to foreign countries and they often played concerts in other countries. And like, it seemed like somebody did the fucking research. Like they knew things about the country that were factually appropriate. They didn't use terms that were offensive. I think the biggest faux pas they did was in one of the songs. They used kind of a Japanese like beat for somebody who was from Vietnam. And that was kind of like noticeable, but it wasn't like aggressively insulting or anything. But like when they actually talked to the people from each country, they really did seem to know what they were talking about. At least, you know, at the very least, somebody fucking cracked an encyclopedia and did some reading, right? They didn't just make it up. And we noticed like it was pretty sensitive that way. And that was really cool. There were many episodes where they talked about just like relating to people and like having childhood trauma where, you know, having a bad experience as a child affected them when they were growing up. One of the characters was an orphan, and so they often thought about their father, and so that issue came up quite a bit. And even with some of the foes, so you have Gem and the holograms. They have a supercomputer called Synergy that provides the holograms. So Jerrica is the real person. She becomes Gem through the power of the holograms, and she becomes a rock star. And so the one thing about this series that didn't work for me was the split identity between Gem and Jerrica. When she's in the office, when she's doing work, when she's just kicking around, she's Jerrica. When she's on stage and doing fabulous things, she was Gem. And so all she'd have to do is touch her earrings and she would transform. The thing that sucked about this, though, was like the people in her group, the holograms themselves, they knew about her secret identity. But she had a boyfriend named Rio. And she never, ever told Rio about the secret identity, which was fucking weird, man, because you never saw the two of them together in a room, or almost never. She could project a hologram of her double, and sometimes it looked like in a room together. But most of the time, one would leave, the other one would show up. That was kind of sus. And also, Rio is like talking to them both. They've got very similar voices. And this kind of weird love triangle appeared where like Rio said he was committed to Jerrica and loved her and she loved him, but then also he had the hots for Gem, and like he would kiss her and like she would kiss him. And so it was like she was cheating on herself with him, and that was really weird. And I kept waiting for them to address it, to be like, hey, I'm actually Jerrica and Gem. It's okay if you kiss me either way because I'm the same person. But they never got there. They never talked about it. And so it seemed like everybody was cheating on everybody, which was just so fucking weird, man. And the weirdest thing was like the people in her band who knew about the double personality or the secret identity, they never said anything. Like, you know, like Rio would be kissing Jerrica, and then like the next scene, Gem would show up. He's like, oh, Gem, I got the hots for you. And like nobody in the band would say, that's fucking weird, or like you're being a douchebag, or like no one said anything. That was the biggest thing that I really couldn't get over. And I don't know why they didn't address it. It just was like this giant elephant in the room that never, ever, ever got addressed. So that was strange. But I will say, despite the fact that that part was fucking weird, the other parts that they got to were pretty good. Like their main rivals were the Misfits, these three girls, Stormer, Pizzazz, and Roxy. And they were like these bad girls of rock and roll who honestly were kind of like psychotic criminals. They should have been put in jail for all the shit they tried to pull. But each one of them, they got their own episode about a backstory. Like Pizzazz, the main character, who was like the most violent out of all of them. Her dad is just like this cold dude who like has no time for her and is really ignoring her. And, you know, she just has this giant gaping hole where the love in their life should be. And so it obviously affects her. That makes her so like angry and upset. You know, same thing for Roxy. Like she couldn't read. And so she was hazed as a child. And so that gave her like kind of a bad attitude. Later on in the series, in the third season, we get introduced to a new rock group called the Stingers. And they're super douchebags. They're Euro douchebags. They come over from Europe and they're just like, oh my God, you guys are like way too much. But they kind of go into the backstory for some of them, especially the lead singer. His name is Riot. He is this like this giant blonde hair, and he kind of looks a little bit like a bisexual Van Halen frontman or something like that. And you think he just sucks like so bad because he's like really kind of arrogant and overbearing and just like, oh, he's just like creepy and skeevy. But then he gets his origin episode and it comes out that like, you know, he was a kid and his dad didn't believe in him. And his dad was this military guy who thought that, you know, music was for sissies and, you know, real men don't do that stuff. And so you can kind of see how Riot did become the asshole that he is today. And he eventually mellowed out. But, you know, you don't get a lot of that stuff in 80s cartoons, like the backstories and why did you get this way? And what are your mom and dad like? And what a relationship's like. I just fucking, I loved it, man. It was really interesting and cool. A real time capsule of the period, and one that I think holds up more than it doesn't. It certainly holds up more than other cartoons of the period do. And so I was just really, really thrilled to be able to check that box that has been on my list since childhood, to be able to watch every episode of Gems. So I was very happy. Just watched the last episode earlier today before the podcast. And the final episode was a really good one. I wasn't sure if they were going to finish it, because sometimes stuff just stopped back in the day. They didn't really wrap up anything, but they did. They must have known the series is coming to an end. They addressed this one issue that had been hanging out about one of the adopted girls. They brought in all of the rival rock groups and everybody was on their best behavior. They played a triple song with everybody chipping in. Like, it was just pretty cool. I just really liked it a lot. So I'm really happy to be able to say that I watched all of Gem. And if you are old as me, maybe that matters to you too. All right, folks, that is it. That's a show. Before we close, I would love for you to leave a review, share us on social media, and most important of all, please recommend us to your friends, because nothing beats word of mouth. And if you like what you heard and you want to support the show and help us out with the cost of running the podcast, you can certainly do that over at patreon.com/thesovietgamespodcast. Join our Discord community if you chip in at the $5 or above level. And as always, we want to get your questions and comments. Hit us up, sovietgamespodcast@gmail.com. Carlos is not here, so I guess you can track him down by Google. And as for me, I'm on every platform. It's my name, BradGallaway, all A's, no O's. I'm on Twitter, I'm on Blue Sky, I'm on Instagram. And this is going to do it for episode 379. Thank you again for joining me here on the Sovietie Games podcast. And I'm pretty sure we will see you next week. I believe Carlos will be back next week. But thank you for spending this hour with just me, myself, and I. Hope you enjoyed it, and we'll catch you then. Bye-bye.